Now we'll go to the next order, the Dermaptera. So, Dermaptera. Derma means skin. So these are literally the skin-winged insects. These are commonly called earwigs. They're called earwigs because there's a superstition that they crawl into people's ears while you're sleeping. And while they may crawl in your ears while you're sleeping, they don't do so any more than any other insect would. So, again, the order name means skin wig, and it wings, and it refers to the front pair of wings are more hardened and leathery, kind of like what we saw in the grasshoppers. There's some question on what to call the front wings. They are what I'd say homologous. They're the same structures as what we, because they're an orthopteroid group. They're homologous or the same origin as what we see in the grasshoppers, which we call tegmina, right? But tegmina, generally when we talk about tegmina, the wings overlap when they're at rest. Whereas when we get to the beetles, we call that elytra, and elytra tend to line up with a straight line down the middle of their back, and they come up to each other. Well, these are more soft and leathery like you would see in tegmina, and the origin is tegmina-like, but they also, they don't overlap. They line up in a straight line down their back like elytra would. So some people actually, I mean, I would still just call them tegmina anyway because of the origin, but some people call it elytriform. Yeah, that's kind of, they're hedging a little bit, so. This is one of the orders that had historically has been lumped in with the Orthoptera, to this, one of those bigger orders. These are small to medium sized. They're elongate, slender, usually fairly dark in color, with well sclerotized bodies. They're easy to recognize at the order level because they do have these forceps like Circe. Remember, what's the only other family that we know of that has forceps like Circe?
The Gypigidae.
Yeah, but they tend to be a lot smaller, and they're always wingless. Earwigs a lot of times have wings, although there are some non-winged forms, but just the size alone is enough to separate the two. They usually have compound eyes, but in a few species the eyes may be reduced or absent. The antennae are long, slender, filiform. As we said, the forewings, if present, are short and leathery. Say they are usually shorter, though, like you see in this picture. They don't cover the whole abdomen. And it gives these things an appearance. When we get to it later, there's a family of beetles called the Staphylinidae, or commonly called rove beetles, that have elytra that looks a lot like this, shorter and that. But being a beetle, it doesn't have the force of, like Circe, right? So, let's see, what else? Tarsi are three-segmented. Ovipositor is usually absent. This order, at one time we didn't think it occurred in North Dakota. There's a paper, 1936 paper by a guy named Habard, and it was a paper on the Orthoptera of North Dakota, and that time he had the broad sense of Orthoptera, where the Dermaptera were in there. But in that 1936 paper, he said there were no native species that occurred in North Dakota. My But he did note that there had been species caught both in South Dakota and Manitoba, so you would think they would be here. My predecessor, twice removed, the guy that was here before me was Dr. Balsbaugh, but the guy that ran the museum before him was a guy named Dr. Post. Dr. Post was still alive when I came here. I actually was able to visit Dr. Post in that. But he's given credit for collecting the first ones in North Dakota out by Hector Airport. And I don't know if more have moved in and become established or because of climate change or whatever, we've got more. But now we catch them. I mean, I think I've caught some. I'm pretty sure I've caught a couple on our trips out, and they're in my backyard. I catch them in my backyard every summer now and stuff. So there are now more of them known from North Dakota. There's about 1,800 species worldwide. I already talked about the Tegmina and Elytra form. Some species have glands on the venter of the abdomen which can emit a foul smelling odor. There's quite varied habits. Some are plant feeders, some are predatory. There's even some that are parasites, ectoparasites on animals. And in fact, my notes, they say the textbook indicates that the order is divided into three suborders. The Erixinina are ectoparasites on bats in Malaysia. So we're not going to worry about those. The Diploglossata are parasites of rodents in South Africa. So we're not going to worry about those either. And then the third one is the Forfaculina, which contains the families that we're more familiar with. So some of these species also exhibit maternal care. The females will watch over the eggs for a few weeks after she lays them in the soil, usually. And we're going to talk about four families. And the first one is the Forfaculidae. One of the main things we look at is you look at the tarsal segments. And this family, the second tarsal segment, is kind of lobed and goes up underneath the last tarsal segment. Okay? Now, when we get to the other families, it's going to look like the others do the same thing, but not near as to the extent as this one does. They're more lobed and going forward or out towards the distal end more than in the other families. The Forfaculidae, these are the European or spine-tailed earwigs. The spine-tailed earwigs refers to some males have just a little tiny spine between the forceps. This picture clear to the right hand side, you can see that little tiny spine between the forceps. Like I said, it can be recognized by the second tarsal segment being lobed on each side on the ventral surface.
Is that on every leg or?
I believe so. Okay. And it may be easier to see looking at it lateral rather than just dorsal or ventral, but look at it from the side. This is a lateral view from here. The tegmina on the wings is usually present, so it usually does have wings. Antennae usually have 12 to 16 segments. The number of segments may help if there's overlap in a lot of them. It's not discrete differences, but In general, the antennae in this family have 12 to 16 segments. The most common species in the family is the European earwig, the Sporficula auricularia. It's written down there at the bottom. Which sometimes can be a pest. Then the next family we're going to talk about is the Anisolabidae, which,
oh,
does your handout still say Carciniforidae? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they rolled the Carciniforidae and a few other small families all into this one family, and it's now called the Anisolabidae. That can be in the other families too. But those may be different species too. I don't know if they have male and female showing of the same species.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah, I don't know if it's all of those are, I don't know if they're all the same. I mean, those may all be different species, each one, too. So, because actually this family, the male and females are quite different. The females, in this family, the females, you know, in the Anisolabidae, the females, the cerci are symmetrical. Right and left are essentially the same looking, whereas in the males, one of them is bent much more sharply, and so they are asymmetrical. So you can see those pictures right down the middle. There's a male and a female showing how they're different. These are the Anisolabidae. They're called the seaside and ring-legged earwigs. Some of them called ring legs because they do have this dark band on the femora subspecies. A lot of times the adults don't have wings, but if they do, they're a little bit differently formed than in the others. If here's the body and here's the midline, in this one, they'll kind of be, maybe I didn't even draw it very well, but they don't go in a straight line all the way down. Yeah, I should have had them probably separated even more than that. They kind of, so they kind of, the distal angle is rounded and they separate. They're not in a straight line all the way back like in the other families. This one he didn't put a... Yeah, I did. And see, there's the second tarsal segment. And see, again, it looks like it goes up under the last segment a little bit, but it's not as near as lobed and as distinct. So here, in this case, they say the second tarsal segment is cylindrical. The pronotum is fairly uniformly colored. We'll see in some of the next couple families that they're more striped. The antennae can have 14 to 24 segments. So 14 to 24, the antennae. Like I said, the tegmina are present as rounded flaps, not meeting at the inner distal angles. The right forceps of the male is more strongly curved than the left, so they're asymmetrical. Our species are in the genus Euboreella. That's the ring-legged ones. This family contains some of the largest earwigs, like in Australia, there's one that's more than 55 millimeters in length. And then the next family is the Labiduridae. Again, the second tarsal segment's not lobed and produced way out. Again, they call it symmetrical. See the figures there in the bottom center. The Labiduridae are called the striped earwigs because now the pronotum look has a couple nice dark stripes on it, which kind of continue on to the elytra or the tegmina. This family only contains a single introduced species in the U.S. This Labidura riparia. Again, the second tarsal segment is cylindrical. Antennae can be 10 to 31 segments. And 10 to 31 and then the 10 to 31 segments, and then this picture in the middle, segments 1, 2, 3, yeah, 4 through 6, when you take those together, are not as long as segment 1 is. So segment 1 is longer than 4, 5, and 6 taken together. Like I said, the pronotum is light brown with the two dark stripes, which continue onto the tegmina. It's a fairly large species, 20 to 30 millimeters in length. And that'll take us into the last family we're going to cover. Get my handouts to behave here. And that is the Labiidae, or the little earwigs. And again, the second tarsal segment is called cylindrical, not lobed out distally like the first family was. The pronotum is fairly uniformly colored here again. The antennae can have 10 to 16 segments. But now, segments 4 through 6, we don't have a picture of it on here, but now segments 4 through 6 are longer than segment 1. So, segments 4 through 6 are longer than segment 1. The tegmina are normally developed and meet along the entire midline. Male forceps are symmetrical. And our species is this labia minor. It's the one that they caught out first caught out there at Hector Airport way back. I don't think this is the one that I'm getting in my backyard, though. I think I'd have to look. It may be that European earwig. And so that finishes up the Dermaptera. Any questions on...
The Cercei Philippidae, they have different forms. Are they generally longer than the other families, or is it just that one species?
Just maybe that one species. Yeah, I'd say we're a little bit early, and I really probably should keep going, but just because I don't want to be in the middle of the stoneflies are next, and it'll take a while. I'd have to go a ways over, so I think we'll just quit there and start with the stoneflies tomorrow. It's a nice place to break. Plus, stoneflies, I don't know. Stoneflies don't seem to be an orthopteroid order to me. You know, they're aquatic, they're so different. But I don't think anybody knows quite where to put them. And so your textbook puts them right here in the middle of the orthopteroids. And we won't stick to it the whole semester, but I try to kind of cover them in the same order as they're in your textbook. But anyway, we'll do the Plecoptera first thing tomorrow, and then we'll get back to orders that seem more like orthopteroid orders.
What prevents them from being placed in their own order if no one knows where it goes?
Well, they are in their own order, but they're what I call the orthopteroid orders. They're a group of orders that are all related to Orthoptera. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, they probably are kind of in their own. I don't know why we cover them, why the textbook covers them right in the middle of the Orthoptera. It'd make more sense for me to cover them like right after the dragonflies, when we've done the Ephemeroptera and the dragonflies, and then do the stoneflies. I don't think the stoneflies are thought to be related to the Ephemeroptera or the Odonata, but they're aquatic group with naiads and whatnot. It just seems like it'd be a more logical place to put them to study, and still right before the orthopteroids, if that's what they're trying to do, show that it might be an orthopteroid order. But so, and at the other end, it would be kind of out of place to put them after the orthopteroids, because the next group of orders are the hemipteroids, and there is actually an order or so that people don't know whether they're not sure if it's an orthopteroid order or a hemipteroid order. I mean, now they're pretty much, well, it's the order Zoraptera when we get to it, but most people now put it in the orthopteroids. I had a graduate student way back who for some reason thought it should be a hemipteroid order, and he and I were trying to study the wing locking mechanisms that hold the front and hind wings together. You know, we always talk about in Hymenoptera, there's the hamulli and all that whole setup to hold the wings together so they beat together. Well, actually, a lot of other groups have mechanisms too, and the hemipteroid orders have a really cool one. It's a little C-shaped structure on one wing, and the other wing just has a nice ridge on the edge that fits in there. In fact, I think it's more sophisticated than what you see in the Hymenoptera, because Hymenoptera, it's like Velcro. Mm-hmm. When they hook in there, but they can't move at all. They're stuck to each other like Velcro would. But in the Hemiptera, it's a C-shaped thing with a ridge, and so there can be that holds it together, but it can slide on itself. But anyway, we were looking at that in the Hemiptera families, and then some of the other orders, and he wanted to find them in Zoraptera. And it's hard to get winged Zoraptera. It's a long story I've made, but Anyway, he was trying to find Zoroptera and was hoping he could find a wing locking mechanism on them that was similar to the other Hemipteroid orders, so that there'd be some evidence that maybe it's a Hemipteroid order rather than... And so the whole point of that was, there's kind of a nice transition from Orthopteroid orders to Hemipteroid orders. And so putting the stoneflies there would mess up that transition, because it... So anyway, regardless, we'll do the stoneflies tomorrow, and then we'll go back to what are, at least on appearances, are more traditional Orthopteroid orders.
That's one question. I'm not quite sure, but Hemipteroid, Orthopteroid, like what kind of classification is that? Is it?
It's just a thing of convenience. It's not a defined taxa or category. I mean, it's not like a super family or a super order or something like that. It's just a convenience. People recognize that these orders, like the eight, well, it'd be kind of like the eight pterygota, but this is within the pterygota. But it's just a group of orders that are all kind of related to Orthoptera, and so we just call them the Orthopteroid orders. And the same thing with the Hemipteroid orders. It's a group that all seem to be related to Hemiptera. They can even do it in the Holometabolus. What do they call it? They probably call it the Trichopteroid, but Trichoptera and Lepidoptera are fairly closely related. And then there's some Dipteroids, and so it's just a matter of convenience. So it's not an official taxonomic category.